Okay, I'm talking with Cliff Whittle, and this is April the 22nd, 2005. Now, Cliff, your full name?
Clifford Whittle.
And your birthday?
Is 2/17/29.
And approximately when did your family come to the valley? And
well, someplace in the 1800s, someplace in the late 1800s. Of course, I don't remember that, but of course, had a long stretch of Dune Whittle was with my great-great-granddad, and he's the one that came to the valley, and that's where the Whittles got started, was from him.
And the name Whittle Lane.
And Whittle Lane was after that because all the Whittles lived down that particular lane, and my folks, they owned a ranch out there for several years, and then I had a couple of uncles that cousins that own ranches down there, and there's still a couple still available out there that still they live on. And but most of them, they lost a lot of property during the Depression, and my folks happened to be one of those unfortunate ones that lost their property, but through several reasons that they did, but they did, yeah, they had the, they lost the property and moved to the Grand, you know, so.
And when you moved to LeGrand, where did your dad work?
My dad worked at the mill for, up until his death, at, I guess he must have worked at the mill for 15 years, I guess, something like that.
And you were how old when your dad died?
I was 9 years old when he was killed, yeah. He was accidentally killed down at the Greenwood grocery store right next to the Greenwood school, where I went to school. And a bad accident. Drunken person came by and picked him off the curb and took him down the street about a half a block or so. And so my father died at that time. He was 48 years old when he died.
Well, it was a bad accident at that time.
Yeah, it was. And of course there wasn't too much to be done about things at that time. Nobody knew how to sue anybody, and my mother, she didn't really understand what was going on. But anyway, it was a bad situation. And, of course, we were all young kids then, you know. My mother, I think there's still five of us at home, you know. And so it was, my youngest sister was 6 months old when my father got killed. But it was one of those tragic things that happened, and so can't do anything about that.
And you went down to school at Greenwood.
I went to school at Greenwood through the fourth grade. Fourth grade. And then I went to Riveria School for the remainder of the time. And then, of course, we moved up on the hill and went to the central school at that time, junior high at that time. But
it, when you were growing up as a kid, there was quite a designation between on the north side of the tracks and the south side of the tracks.
It definitely were.
It more or less divided the town at that time.
Yeah, it really did.
And what do you think about it now? Do you think that that division?
I think it's kind of equal to size. Oh, yeah, I think a certain percentage of it does. Yeah, I really do. I think it's equaled out a little bit better than it was at that time, but I still feel like there's the upper crust, as we might call it, you know, and the lower, you know. But anyway, it just seemed like the people who lived on the north side of town just had a disadvantage of wasn't quite as wealthy, so-called. Everybody walked to school and carried their own lunches and stuff at that time, you know. But I think it probably still exists a little bit. Maybe not quite as bad. But.
What did you think of school when you were?
I thought school was great. You know, I enjoyed going to school. I wasn't the smartest pupil in the world, but I enjoyed going to school. I had a disadvantage. I quit school in the senior year, and then I went back to the next year and got a GED, but I had to quit because I needed to help my mother with the financial situation, so I had to go to work early. And I started working early, and so that...
What did you start doing when you first started work?
I started working when I was 11 years old on farms.
Uh-huh.
I was driving horses and bundle wagons and harrowing and plowing and stuff with horses that we didn't have a lot of tractors around at that time. But I started working when I was pretty young. Not much money, but lots of work.
Yeah.
But I think it was a good thing for me. It taught me a lot of things that I probably wouldn't have gotten other places, and work don't hurt nobody. So, and I had lots of relations that that hired me every year, so I always had a job, you know. So, and it put me in school and put my mother a little bit better financially. But
well, what'd you think when you got into high school? What were the things that?
Oh, I think that high school. High school was another one of those things, John, that I think that, once again, the lower class of people, which I was, you know, had to contend with the upper class of people, and so you really never felt comfortable in some of the classes because there was more people that lived on this side of the town than was on the north side that came to high school up here. But I got along in high school. I had some good teachers, and I got along well with sports and stuff, so I made my way through school, and it was just one of those disadvantages that I had to leave before I really got a good graduation from it. But I did get it, wind up with one anyway, but it's not the same as graduating with a whole class.
Yeah.
That was a disadvantage of it, you know. But
anything you liked real well in high school?
Well, I'll tell you what, I did. I liked the couple of subjects that I liked in school. Is one of them is I liked math and I liked English. Was two of my better subjects that I preferred to have was, and I had some good teachers, you know. Mrs. Williams, she taught me a class there, but I can't remember the lady that taught us English, but she was a little tough, but she was a good teacher. And I just can't think of her name. I just
that's right off.
But anyway, she was a good teacher. But I had one of the best teachers I think I ever had was when I was in Riviera School. A man by the name of Conway was the sports coach, and he also taught, I'm not sure, but I think he taught math. But he was a good person, too.
I've heard of him.
But I enjoyed being taught by him.
With being the Depression, and then the war started in 1941, what did you think was going on in town at that period of time?
Well, you know, I don't know, John. There was a lot of things going on that you just didn't realize that was, it didn't seem like there'd be any big problems with it, but there were still lots of things going on that you just didn't realize at that age, you know, that it was a big deal, you know, but it was kind of a big deal for a lot of people. And of course, Depression was really a bad situation for lots and lots of people. It was that just didn't have anything to go with. That's all there was to it. My parents happened to be one of those, but we salvaged the thing and we lived well. We didn't have anything out of the ordinary, but it was just one of the big things. If you don't have it, you don't have it. But we had a fairly good-sized family, and my father, he done as well as he could by the work that they done, you know. But
you had three sisters and one brother, so there was five of you.
No, I had five sisters and one brother.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I have five sisters and one brother.
Lost track of the two of
your
sisters.
Yeah, right. Two of the youngest sisters.
Oh, uh-huh.
But, yeah, and then after my mother, she had to go to work, you know. But anyway, after that, during this bad situation of finances, you know, then my mother, she finally, she just had to go to work and raise kids. And so, anyway, somebody had to be around to help raise the kids, and so I happened to be the one. And so I like I said, I quit school so I could help her out for that year because she was in a bad situation. But anyway, I'm not sorry of it. It was one of those things that had to be done, you know. But I had a good life, you know. I don't have any problems with the way I lived, you know. I learned a lot of things, and I had a good family to be with, and so.
Do you remember rationing and?
I'll say, yeah.
You couldn't get any gas because it was also rationed, and with the war starting, and a number of people moved from Madrid.
Oh boy, I'll say that, yeah, lots of people.
Went to the shipyards and
Yeah.
The airplane factory in Seattle.
And lots of them never returned. You know, some of them, lots of people didn't come back. You know, they stayed wherever they were, you know. But and then when I got my first automobile, you know, I thought I was the king of the roost, you know, because that I saved and scrunched for that vehicle and finally got it, you know. But and I got it during the time that the gas was rising, and so you didn't get to use it too much because you don't really get any gas, you know. So,
what kind of a car did you have?
That was a Canadian Model A, 1931, Canadian Model A, and I bought it from Orville Marshall, and we run around together as good friends, and I kept telling him I wanted to buy that car if he got it, and finally he decided to sell it, and finally I bought it, and it turned out that it was a pretty good deal that I finally had to quit walking and could drive, you know. But
remember what you paid for it?
I get $300 for it.
You could always get for a Model A.
Oh yeah,
a good price.
Yeah, always. At that time, you know, of course, I thought it was a lot of money, which it was, you know, but it really, for the automobile, to get an automobile for $300 was still a pretty good thing, you know. But anyway, I had it for several years, and then of course, I got married, and then I had to change automobiles and such, but I had it for quite a while.
Was that the one that you took me to the Union for to find my watch?
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one I went to Union to look for a watch in. Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
Here we were at midnight out there.
Looking for a watch.
A stock show looking for a watch over at Union.
We'll never forget that one. Anyway, the trouble it is, we didn't find it that night though, did we?
Found it the next day.
Yeah, we did. Found it the next day.
Well, about that time, was that when you went to work for the freight company?
No, I went to work for, I was 17 years old, and I worked for Rivers Egg Company during the summertime. And then, when I got out of school, finished my school and got my GED and stuff, I worked for Rivers Egg Company for about 2.5 years, I guess, 3 years. And I delivered and picked them up and delivered eggs out of Idaho, and we kept bringing them to town and cattle them, and then I'd deliver them to hospitals and such. But I worked for him, and then I went to work for the freight company.
Oh.
I thought when I left him, you know, I went to the freight company, Portland Pendleton Freight Company at that time, and the difference in salary, I thought I was a millionaire. And
what did you do for them?
I drove a delivery truck for the first 2 years I was there, and then I drove road trucks after that. But I worked for them for 5 years, I guess, and then I decided to go into the service station business.
That's when you bought the one down on Fur where Commercial Tire is now?
Right, uh-huh. Yeah, where Chinatown used to be. And I just took a wild shot in the dark, you know.
You and Myrna were married.
Yeah.
You also delivered groceries that Homer Lockwood had passed away.
Yeah. When I moved down to the service station, old George Groot had a TV station right there in the buildings where the and there was also an apartment behind his place, and so we decided, between Myrna and I, she was waiting tables at the time at the Royal Cafe, but we decided at that time we had to get closer to that station if we was going to make money at it, you know. And so anyway, I put a buzzer on the deal so the truckers could buzz me and get me up, and I'd go out and service them at night, you know. But then later, we went into the delivery service business, delivering groceries and drugs and for restaurant for the drug stores, and picking up blood plasma for the hospital at the bus depot. And then I got a PUC permit so I could deliver furniture for Montgomery Wirtz and Sears and then of course then we got the ambulance service on top of that.
How did you happen to get the ambulance?
Well, I'll tell you, really, John, I really don't know how I got that, but I was a volunteer fireman, and Bide Snyder was the chief at that time, and they just came over and asked me one time. He said, "You know, Cliff, you're pretty active. Why don't you just take over the ambulance service?" And I said, "My gosh, why would I want with an ambulance service, you know?" And he said, "Well, we need somebody to operate it. They want it out of the fire department." And he said, "You got a good place here. You got a place to park it and everything." And I said, "Well, yeah, I have." Well, anyway, I got the ambulance service. It was given to me through the city of Grand. So we operated the ambulance service for, I don't know, two
and a half. What kind of training did you have to go through?
I had it. Well, they didn't have a lot of training. They sent me down to Salem, and I went through, I called it a first aid training, you know. And the training I got down there was basically through the state police, where I got the training of how to handle patients with busted backs and lacerations and things like this that you wouldn't normally have with a Band-Aid. But anyway, I had to take one associate with me down there because I had to have two people in the ambulance every time I left. But anyway, I took one of the firemen went down with me. And so we went down there, and was down there for 4 days, and we took training down there in emergency situations. But it's nothing like today's, you know. But
no.
Anyway, I lost the ambulance service because I moved out of town to a truck stop, and the city didn't want it out of the city limits, which was a bad situation I thought they made. But anyway, because I'd already had plans to buy a new ambulance, up-to-date, I mean, more like what they're driving today, you know. But then the old Cadillac I had, that they had, was, it done the job, you know, but it was still...
Well, it was the old Amos Helm.
That's right, it was. That's exactly what it was. And the biggest thing we had with the ambulance service was, at that time, Hot Lake was the situation where the county had for older people to a rest home. And our biggest thing was transporting them back and forth from there to the hospital for the county, and which was a good deal for me because it was a county-operated thing, and they just paid me so much for every trip out there and back. But, you know, it was a good experience. Of course, I don't think I'd like to be in the ambulance business, but, you know, when you was in the ambulance business and people would ask you, well, what happened when you got up there? Well, you don't know what happened when you got up there. Your stomach is full of butterflies till you get there. And when you see these people that's in these accidents, you don't pay any attention to what's around there. You only have one job to do, and that's to pick the people up and get them to the hospital. And, of course, we didn't have lots of training in medics at that time, so you had to do it as quick as you could and to get them to the hospital. But it was a good experience, and I wasn't sorry that I'd done it, but there was probably been better things I wish I had done. But once I got it, why, it was okay.
And it was through your experience with the service station, what have you, that this came about for the truck stop?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was. You know, I had a good business, so anyway, I had the opportunity to go out to the truck stop, and we thought it was a good move. Myrna and I did. She had already quit working, and she was running the delivery service and all the other things. And so, anyway, we thought it was a good move to go out there. It was where the old men's villa used to be, and it was not the truck stop that's there today. But anyway, we operated it for 2.5 years, and we had a couple of bad things happen to us, and unforeseen, you know. So I sold it out to Glavis Reed, is who I sold it to. Mm-hmm. And Glavis operated it for about a year or two, and then he sold it in Marvin Moe, the person that owned it. He brought his brother in to operate it, and that's. But we had a little, but it was a good experience, and we'd done a good business, and we were knowledgeable in the cafe business anyway. So the cafe was a good thing, and then when we left there, we came to town and bought the fountain cafe from
Charlie Carter.
Yeah. And so we operated that for 14 years, I guess. And then Myrna went to school when she's 41 years old and got her GED, and then she went to college and got her teaching degree. And then she went to college, and then she went over to Union and taught Spanish and English in Union until she became sick. And then, of course, you know about that. But anyway, then we got out of the cafe business. But
if you, in the meantime, would come to work for Hanford Sales,
as
a car salesman.
1958, I was the best car buyer in the world, and when Claude asked me to come to work, you know, I said, gee, I don't know about this. I said, I can buy it, but I don't know about selling. And so anyway, in 1958, I went to work for Hanford, and of course you were there, and we stayed there a long time.
During that time, you did other things beyond the day's work. You in the summertime, mowed hay along the right-of-ways of the highway.
Yeah.
How did you get into that?
Well, I'll tell you what, how I got into it was I had a few cows and horses, when they bought the property for the freeway, down behind the mill and around, and I thought, well, boy, there's some awful good fields down there, so I went down to the state highway and asked Hyatt, who was the engineer here at that time. I asked him what I could do to get to cut the hay off of those particles of parcels of property down there. He said, "Well, nothing. You can just go cut them." And he said, "By the way," he said, "why don't you just take all of it?" And I said, "What do you mean by all of it?" He said, "Well, we're not going to get the freeway in for a while, so why don't you just take all this property, lease it from me?" And I said, "Guys, I don't know about that." But anyway, they had 160 acres of ground that the state had bought, see? And so anyway, I leased it from them. And so I farmed it all the way from all down around the mill all the way up to the top of the hill. And I had it clear to North Powder, but I didn't want to go over the hill. But I had
Glad Canyon,
yeah. Yeah. Well, then when they put the freeway in, well, I just continued the lease and I farmed all the right-of-ways. And I done that for a lot of years. But anyway, that's how I got involved in it.
Then you got involved in music.
I got involved in music.
How did you get involved in music?
Well,
had you played
before? I had. I hadn't played any particular place other than I had a guitar and I knew a few chords, and anyway I had a person by the name of I can't think of his name now, Joel Licker, I think it was. Anyway, he had a dance band and he's playing the Eagles, and so he wanted me to come up and sing for him, so I went up and sang for him for about 6 months, and I didn't play an instrument at that time. And anyway, he told me one day, he said, "You know, Cliff," he says, "I just about have to have somebody that can play besides singing." And I said, "Well, I can understand that." So anyway, I got fired, if you want to call it that. But anyway, this was in 1954 or 55, and I was told Myrna one day, I said, "You know what? I think I'd just like to start my own band." And she said, "You're out of your mind." And I said, "No, I think I will." And so anyway, I put an ad in the paper, and the first Sunday that I had these people come out there, I had 35 people show up for it to tell me how they could play music, you know. And John, I didn't have the least idea what I wanted to do about a band or anything else. But anyway, that's when I started playing music in 1955. And it was kind of interesting. I had lots of people that showed up and good musicians, and I wound up with Dorothy Brown, who's still playing music right now, and her husband. And then it was two or three other people. When we started out, I had an 11-piece band when I first started, and there was no amplification. It was just acoustic, I think. And so we done that for a couple of 3 years, playing public dances and stuff, you know. And then I got involved in the music business.
What kind of money did they pay for
he didn't make much money. You know, we played in all these outskirts, Grange Halls and stuff, and we charged $1 a head, I think it was, for people to come to in. And they brought kids and everybody with them, you know. And the kids would be around these old fire wood stoves and stuff, and they'd bring sandwiches, and it was a kind of an interesting thing. But it was.
But you had fun.
But we had fun. We didn't make money, but we had fun. The best about that, when I had an 11-piece band, we were lucky if we'd make $5 a night. And of course, we had to have expenses too to get there, you know. But it wasn't the best money in the world, but it. And then when we went into nightclubs, well, then that was a different story, you know, because you could kind of name your own price at that time.
You played down at the Eagles quite a lot.
I played at the Eagles a lot, yeah. In fact, the first place I played was when I went to play music. I went up to the Eagles and I told, I can't remember who the trustees were at that time, but I went in and I told them that I'd like for them to listen to my music. And they said, well, Cliff, we already have a band. And I'm smart aleck, you know, not really smart, but I said, no, you haven't got a band to listen to mine, you know. And so they said, well, we still got Joe playing for us. And I said, I realize that, but I said, why don't you just let me come up and play for you Friday night and you listen to my music. And so anyway, I did. And 2 weeks later, I had the job. And I played there for, I think our first set in the Eagles, I think we played there for 7 months. And then I got involved later, you know, I got involved in rodeos and stuff, playing rodeo dances and such. But in the 24 years that I had the bands, I missed 11 Saturday nights. And then I made those up in between, you know, but...
Working full time at the garage, selling cars and
playing music,
paying when the in between, playing music. I don't know how you did it.
Well, you know, I don't either. You know, when you stop back and think about it, John, I don't know how we done it either. But we done it, and it didn't interfere with my job. You know, I still worked. You know, but and Myrna, of course, she run the cafe at the same time. And but you know, I don't know. You just do things when they come. When
then we got involved in the car racing.
In the racing business, yeah.
And what was the name of the car that you and Myrna had?
The Pink Lady. I went to the JCs, and of course you know about this. The JCs were the one that built that racetrack out there, and of course I wasn't even interested in racing cars. It was just one of those projects that we had. And the next thing you knew, I got to thinking about racing cars, and so. This friend of mine, he knew of a car over at Pendleton, so we went over and bought this car.
What kind of a car?
It was a 34 Ford. It was all cut down, but it was a anyway, we had to put a motor and stuff in it. And of course, I raced them under the rainbows in truck stop, you know. But I had 5 race cars, and I had cooks and waitresses and everybody else driving them. And the one thing about the Pink Lady is... it got barred off the track the second year because they thought that it was cut down too far. And Myrna, she was giving me a bad time about racing cars. And what it turned out to be, she wound up to be the top powder puff driver out there. And 2 years in a row, she had the worst wreck on the track out there. It was done by her, you know. And she got in this racing business, and there was no way of stopping her. But I raced my car for speed, and of course she had to drive my car, so she always started in the last, you know. But she thought that the last was ended at the first curve, you know, so she took everybody off the track. But anyway, she turned out to be a good driver, and we enjoyed doing it, but it was it's kind of an expensive hobby to get into. But then the next year, I bought a 34 Ford. Just almost brand new. And I took it down to the shop, and 2 hours later, you just couldn't have told it was a 34 Ford. But anyway, I called it a party doll, and we drove it for the rest of the remaining time we raced cars, and then sold it to a guy up in Baker, and he came down and bought it and took it up there. But we enjoyed racing. But the thing of it is, I'd play music at the Flamingo Club on Saturday night and be out there Sunday morning racing cars. When I quit playing music, I was playing music up in Enterprise. I played up there 5 consecutive years for the same person. When I would leave to go on rodeo situations, why, I hired the music to take my place. I just made sure he had good entertainment when I left, you know. And that's when I quit playing music. It was up at Enterprise. It was the last year I played it.
Well, during that time, they started the Blue Mountain Boys.
Oh, yeah.
And what?
I don't know what year that really was, but it was...
About 1958, 59.
Yeah, that's when I thought it was, too, yeah.
And it seemed at that time the fact that you didn't know who the Blue Mountain Boys were made it so much more...
Oh, interesting.
And they...
Entertainment.
...did a lot for the community.
They really did.
And
good entertainment.
Went to Pendleton to the Roundup. Went to Salem.
That was the one thing I was going to mention about this music. I was the first one that had... Right. I was talking to George Groot about this, and I said, I like to figure out how I could play live amplified music on this, in the praise and stuff. He said, I think I can figure that out for you. So he did. He built this amplifier from changing from a 12 volt to 110. And first time we tried it out was right here in La Grande. And so then when the rodeo came up over there, we went over there and we had the first live music in a parade in the Pendleton Roundup, and I put it in there. And George Groot had to follow me along behind in his thing because the cord had to be up from his pickup up to the truck. But it was kind of interesting. People were really surprised that they could hear this live amplified music in a parade, you know. Then after that, why, he built me one that I just took with me wherever I went, you know. But it was kind of interesting. I got involved in music, and I really enjoyed playing music. But Myrna had done a lot of stuff in the music business with me, you know, advertising.
Did somebody show you how to play the chords?
No, I'll tell you what, John. I knew a little bit, but when I first started playing music, Dorothy Brown played the piano, and I'd stand by her, and she'd tell me what chords to move to from the ones I didn't know. And I'd done most of the singing, and so anyway, we always had the microphone and everything next to her so that she could tell me if I wanted to go to a flat or a sharp or whatever I needed to go to. And anyway, she's really the one that brought me into the...
Talk about Dorothy Brown and how she told you what chords...
Yeah, she did. She told me what chords to use at a certain time in the deal. And so really, when you get right down to it, she's really the one that helped me the most in the music business. And her husband, he was a good person too, you know, and he played a guitar. She wanted me to play music with her when she came back. And I liked to have done it, you know, but of course, and you don't have vocal cords now, you know, once you quit using them. And you can't get them back. So I tried it, and it just didn't work. So I, just like my voice right now, it isn't, I'm not doing what I should be doing. But anyway, I couldn't get the vocal cords back, and so I just decided not to get involved in it. But she was a wonderful person to play music. She must have, we played music together probably for 15 years, I guess, before she and Jim left here and went to Idaho. But I had some awful good musicians, and that's what made the music, was the musicians that I had behind me. And that was the number one thing. I knew the music, and I knew the sound I wanted, and I had to find the guys that could do it. Even though I didn't read music or anything else, but I just knew that sound that I needed for Western music. And so anyway, it turned out pretty good. We enjoyed it.
Well, when you bought the restaurant from Charlie Carter, did he teach you how to cook?
Not really, John, because see, when we owned the truck stop, mm-hmm. we had a chef that taught Myrna and I how to be chefs.
Oh.
We had to do that because the people that worked for you were older, the type of people that cook. And they liked to do things their way, and we wanted it done our way. And so we were fortunate. Some gentleman came through shortly after we bought the restaurant. And he was out in New York, and he taught us how to cook. Myrna was basically the cook out there. I was the fill-in-er, because I had the truck stop to run. But anyway, she basically knew pretty much about how to cook. But Charlie Carter, he showed us a lot of things about a restaurant that we didn't know otherwise.
Shortcuts.
And he knew how to do things and make a plate look good to a person. And so, no, Charlie, we admired him. He stayed with us for about a year after we bought it. And but he was a good cook and a good chef, and he showed us a lot of tricks in his trade that we didn't learn out there, you know. But yeah, we learned a lot from Charlie. He was, but that was a good business, you know, to have. We had a friendly type business there, and people like Dick Staub and people would come down, and if I wasn't there early in the morning, they'd get the thing open while they'd wait. And while I was trying to get things going, they was making coffee and everything else. It was a family affair, you know. But
in the meantime, you were selling cards.
And in the meantime, I was selling cards, yeah. Yeah, in the meantime, it was that. That was probably one of the finest jobs I had for the person I worked for and the people we worked for and with, you know. But of course, George Lorenzen, he was a nice person to work with.
He was. Then you got to a clientele, people came in,
just automatically.
It was important that you knew who they were, you called them by name when they came in, and
you go have coffee with them as soon as they sold the car, and you didn't have, you're not ashamed of anything, you know. And then when they sold out, well, of course, George, he wanted to retire, and so I had an opportunity to go to the railroad, so I decided I was going to try that, so that's where I went. I went to the railroad for 8 years, and then I got bought off there.
When you say you went to the railroad, what did you do at the railroad?
I was a train dispatcher, crew dispatcher, and train dispatcher. I gave orders out of the boardroom and out of the operator's room, and we brought trains into the yard and worked them and on a computer, and take the ones out we didn't want to go out of the yard and put the train back together. It was an interesting job. Of course, it was to me because I wasn't raised by the railroad, but it was really an interesting job for me because I learned computers and I learned how you give orders over the radio to the trainmen. Then I worked up in the train master's office for a period of time, and that got me into a timekeeper out on the work trains, and I got hooked into that, and I traveled the work trains for about 7 months, and I traveled from Huntington to Portland, from Portland to Spokane, and Spokane to Fairview and Chico, and that was really an interesting job, was a timekeeper for 30 to 40 people on a work train, you know, everything I'd done at the railroad I enjoyed doing because it was interesting to do it, you know. But then the time changed and finally all of us got bought off, and then of course I went back to selling cars for 8 years again. But
did they still make things out in 5 copies?
Oh, still, yeah. Well, you know that too, yeah. But they still did at that time, you know. I had a bad situation up with the train master. One time I'll tell the bad stories about it too. I was given train orders over the computer to the work train for the next day, and I fouled up the times on it, and I had trains running into the work crews and everything else, finally they got me on the phone the next day, and he said, "Where did you get those orders, Cliff?" And I said, "Well, I had them laying right there in front of me." And they said, "Well, yeah, you did, but you just reversed them." I said, "You're kidding me." And I said, "No, we got we got a passenger train running right into the work crews. And I said, nah, you can't be. Well, anyway, I did. I got the order reversed, and where the passenger train should have been shut down for 25 minutes while I was letting it run, and the work crew wasn't ready for it to go through there, and it got solved all right, but I kind of made a blunder right there. It could have been a bad situation because I reversed the orders, but...
The way a railroad used to be, you could get fired for something like that quite easily. Yes, you could.
No question about it, yeah. Yeah, I got called up to the roadmaster's office about it, you know. Said, boy, you know, Cliff, you don't make mistakes like that. And I said, I realize that, but I said, I just flipped the orders around, you know, instead of telling the work crew when to get off the tracks, I was letting the train run into it, see, and so, but it all came out of the head, you know, but you make blunders, you know. But anyway, I enjoyed that job. And I enjoy selling cars really the best of everything, other than the fact that after I went to work for the other company, it wasn't, you didn't have the same connection with your customers as you did when we worked for Hanford, you know, so
yeah.
They didn't want you to have too much contact with the customers. And that's, I sold more cars at somebody's table on empty contracts than I did in the business, you know. And of course you realize that because you had to type them, but they wouldn't let you do that at Tamarack. You had to, they wanted you in the store, you know, so.
Things change.
Yeah, they really do.
Well, you can go right out in the field and talk to the people right at the source.
Oh, that's right.
That was good.
I went out to this one farmer's place, and I had a suit on and a necktie, and I go out there, and he's running this cat out there. And he said, you want to talk to me? He said, you got to get on this cat. And I said, okay. So I get up there in this suit, and I'm riding around this dirt out there. And when I got all done, I sold him the pickup all right, but he said, you know, Cliff, when you go out to the farmers, probably what you ought to do is dress in work clothes in case you have to ride another cat someplace. So anyway, when I went out to the farmers, well, I wore Levi's and stuff and looked a little more presentable. But
how many trucks did you sell Cooper that time?
Yeah,
those big trucks that he used out there.
See, I sold him a total of 5 trucks at one time, the big ones, and that's when he changed over from to his own name, you know. But the one we sold him 11 or 12 of those Econoline vans at one time too, you know. But anyway, he bought those trucks and that was another customer I had that just called you up and tell you to buy something, you know. But that's when they had confidence in you and you had confidence in them, you know, to just do things over the telephone, you know. But he was a good customer. It's just one of those bad situations, you know. But he bought those 5 trucks, and I don't know, Howard Murphy or somebody went back and got this for us, I think. I'm not sure who it was. I think it was Howard Murphy, wasn't it? Anyway, he went back east and picked up those trucks out of the truck shop for us. Anyway, he changed his mind so many times on those trucks, but they're still running around town. 3 of them, a couple of farmers still got, you know, food. And then the other one, I had a good customer was Homer Collins, the logging business. Sold him lots and lots of vehicles, and he was a good customer. But I really enjoyed that.
He sold Boff and Evelson.
Oh yeah, Boff and Evelson too, yeah. Yeah, they just call up and wreck a pickup or whatever and says, hey, we got to have a pickup. And so 10 o'clock at night, we're delivering pickups to them, you know. But in fact, Gene Boffin, he's still a good friend. He quit the logging business, but I see him quite often. He's a good customer, a good friend. Then after I got out of that, well, then of course I went to, I retired at the store at Ford. And then I kind of bummed around for 2 or 3 months, and I didn't like that retirement program. And I went to work for the Habitat up here on 12th Street for about 6-8 months, and janitorial that place, and that was a good job. And then I went to work for Coast to Coast. And now I wound up out at DMV. Been out at DMV 7, 8 years now.
Well, it seems like you could find a job most any time that you wanted to work.
Well, I think so, John. I don't know. Some of it's from a little bit of experience, and some of it's from knowledge of people, you know. And that's one of the nice things about it, is the people, you know, appreciate when you can help them do something, you know. So, yeah, I enjoy working, so.
And they come in and ask for you.
And that's the main thing, yeah.
Yeah, because they know that you're going to give them full service at what you're working at.
Yeah, I just walked into the store day before yesterday just to see what was going on. And somebody's standing there, and I'm talking to the boss, and they said, if you ever get done talking, I'd like to talk to you about something. And I wasn't even working. And anyway, it was Mel over here, heating outfit. And anyway, I just had some knowledge on what he wanted to know about something, and so I got that straightened up. But no, I enjoy people coming in and really asking for me to. And in a situation where you know you can help them do something, you know, so.
Well, it's good people care about things.
I think it is, too.
What do you think of the prices of cars today compared to when we first were working?
My gosh, John, I can't hardly believe the prices of cars today. When we go back to the time that we got into the car business and the prices that are today, I don't understand where they get all this money into these vehicles. When they start talking $35,000, $40,000 for a pickup, you know, my gosh, I just about choke. But you know, that was something when I went back to work from the railroad, and Bob Wylam was there, and I was sharpening myself up on getting back into business again. I went in and had him figure up a car deal for me, and he got this all figured up. And so I go out and tell this young couple, I said, well, I can actually do this, but your payment, I thought, was ridiculous. $316 a month. And I didn't even want to tell the people it was that much money. And they said, oh, that's fine. And, you know, it just shocked me to find out that people had to pay that kind of money for a car payment, you know. Because when I left there, $160 was an enormous car payment, you know. And Bob Wylam told me, he says, you know, Cliff, you'll have to get used to this because you'll be up into the $400 bracket here pretty soon, you know. But it did. It kind of shocked me to have to tell these people that that was what they had to pay for a car, you know.
And then long payments?
And long payments, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they got out of the 24 and 36 months, you know.
Yeah, 36 months was a long time when we first started. And then all of a sudden here you're talking about 5 years.
But you know, that was the advantage, John, for salesmen, George and I. When we were selling contracts on 24 and 36 month contracts, and the price of the automobiles, you could go out every 2 years and park a car in a person's driveway and you automatically sold it, because you could sell them a brand new car 2 years newer and for $10 to $15 more a month. And they didn't have to worry about tires or anything that's on the old car. So you could actually just automatically sell cars on a 24 to a 36 month contract. But then when it got into the 48 and the 72s and all this stuff, that eliminated that. But the best years we had in our, I think, in the car business was in the 70s up through into 70 and 79. We had good years in the car business at that time. But that was when you could do this, see?
Well, I remember you and I talking about, when they were talking about so many miles per gallon, and the 73 LTD was getting 23 miles per gallon, and they came out with these small cars that didn't get any more
mileage. No.
And you couldn't put your family in it.
That's right.
They were made for four or five people at the very most.
I wanted to bring up a story, because I don't know if you remember this or not, because this involves you in a car business. When I first went to work for Ham, where they had about 9 salesmen at that time. Do you want to think of the guy's name? But George was there, and Oscar
Irwin.
Irwin, yeah. And anyway, there's several sitting in the store, and this guy came in the front door, a farmer-looking person, beard and stuff. And they, of course, I was the new one, and they said, well, this is your turn. And I didn't even know what they was talking about, my turn, you know. But anyway, I'd go out there, and I walked up to this guy and asked him if I could help him, and he walked right on by me, you know. And I thought, oh, man, this is a good start, you know. But anyway, he goes over and looks at this Lincoln on the floor, and I can remember the price was $4,167 for that Lincoln. And so he said, what would I have to pay for this? And I said, well, the price is right there, because I didn't know what you'd done about prices, you know. And he said, well, how long would it take to get ready? And I didn't have any idea. I had to go over and ask you, how long would it take me to get the car ready off the floor? And so you told me, well, probably 30 minutes or so. But anyway, this guy comes over and he said, well, what do you need to find out? He said, I'm going to be gone for an hour and I'll be back to pick it up. And so anyway, he said, you could call Baker Boyer Bank in Baker to see if my check is going to be any good. So you called them, and I think you told me that you asked how many did you want to buy. But anyway, he lived up at Richland. I can't even think of his name now. But anyway, these guys, they really got a big blowout out about that. The first car I ever sold, and you had to be the one to help me do it. But
well, funny things happened during that period of time.
Boy, I sure say.
And we worked for a very nice man, Claude.
We sure did. Of course, there, you know, everybody has their ups and downs, but I don't think you can find a better person to work for than he was, you know.
I can remember him saying that one of our salesmen one time didn't make enough money to live on during the month, and he said we owed it to our employees to see that they earned a living wage.
Yeah, he did do that too. Yeah, he sure did. Yeah. Well, he took us as employees as part of the family, you know, and it was really, everybody looked out for everybody else, and you know, it was, of course, you knew him a lot longer than I did, but he was still a good gentleman to work for. And everybody was good to work for in there, though. All of us got along good.
Well, people tried to help one another.
Yeah, they did. That's no kidding.
We cared.
Yeah. Sure did. Yeah,
I've always thought if you treat your employees right, then it comes back.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guys out in the shop were
same thing. Yeah, same thing. Then when I got in the cattle business, you know, I'd done that over I had horses that I was taking care of, but this cattle thing, I never could figure out how you can make enough money in the cattle business to own a ranch out here. It did pencil out for me, but anyway, I was home one time and Myrna mentioned, she says, gee, you know how much I spent for milk? And I said, no. She said, well, I spent $30 for milk for you and Doug. And I said, you're kidding. And I'm reading this paper and here's a cow in there for $300. And I said, gee, I could buy this cow here for it and pay it off in 10 months. And she said, what? And I said, yeah, I can milk this cow right here. Anyway, I went over and bought that cow, and that got me in the cattle business right there. And we were in the cattle business about 7-8 years then, and we just got too big for our britches and no place to go with them, and it was hard to find pasture, and I was doing twice as much haying as I had to do because I'd done it for shares to get my cows fed. And anyway, I just woke up one day and I decided I'm going to get out of the cattle business, you know. But that one cow went from, in that length of time, went from one cow to 100 head when I sold out. And Myrna wasn't too happy with it, but we looked at different places and it was just too expensive to try to buy a ranch out there to handle that many cattle and to make it pay off, you know. So anyway, we got out of the cow business at that time and decided just to quit and go back to work, and so that's what we done. But we enjoyed it. It was a lot of work. And we done most of it all at night and on Sundays and weekends. And then
Myrna started in the lawnmower business?
Well, yes, she did. She got started in that, and she done that accidentally. Doug had the business, and him and his wife, and they had a good business, and Myrna was helping them because he got a little more than he should have. And his wife decided that she wanted to leave, and so they just up and left, and left the business there, and everybody called him not to know. And the next thing you know, Myrna's in the yard business. And so we took care of it for a couple of 3 years until I had the heart attacks, and then I couldn't do that anymore. So anyway, then she just automatically stayed in it, and she's still in it, and she enjoys doing it. It's hard work, but she likes it. So
you don't have to repair the lawnmowers anymore?
No, no. But the lawnmowers is, she probably, she does one day of what people do a whole year and with one lawnmower. So it takes quite a bit to keep them up, you know, and keep everything fixed for her. And between me and my brother-in-law, we keep them going for her. But she's just an ambitious person, and she likes to work, and she enjoys it, and people admire for the work she does, and I think that's what creates the whole thing, you know. But I don't chase lawnmowers anymore.
That's a good job.
Yeah, she does, and she has a good snow removal business too in the wintertime. But she has lots of things going. She's an active person, and she has a cleaning business, and she has a window business. And
with her help, that keeps her going.
Oh, she says that if she ever sat down, that'd probably be the end of her, and it might be too, you know. She just keeps her mind off of everything else, you know, with her work, and so it's a good thing. We enjoy working, so I guess that's the name of the game. But that's about all the stories that I know, John.
Most everybody else is retired by the time your age.
No, they are, yeah. But you know, the thing that's surprising me, how many of my age of people have passed on, and none of them are very active. They retired and they just kind of sit down. And I still contend that I think you know it as well as I do. You got to be active to keep yourself physically and mentally fixed to make a good life out of yourself. You know, I just don't believe in sitting down. So. And of course, all through life, people make mistakes, and you have to live through those. And of course, I had a bad mistake at the truck stop, and you know about that. But you can't sit down; you got to live through it. And some of it was my fault, and some of it was other people's fault. But anyway, you just make life the way you want it to be. So, but we've had a good life. Myrna and I are satisfied with what we've done. Maybe some changes sometime down through the life, but I don't know what it would have been.
Another project that you and I talked about when we were in the Junior Chamber of Commerce was the Christmas program that we talked with
the
kids.
Oh, yes. Boy, that was the most enjoyable thing it was.
Might tell about how that happened and what we did.
Well, the thing that happened, it started out, and we was helping the needy type of people, and one thing led to another. The next thing you knew, we were in a Christmas shopping spree for these young people that couldn't afford their kids to have a Christmas. And we all got involved in that, and it really went over well. And we stayed with that for several years. I know that everybody got involved in it. That's one thing that I think that we got more out of JC's as a group of people doing something. We got more people involved in that than we did in any of the other activities that we had.
Well, what we did, we collected money and took the kids out shopping for their whole family.
Yeah.
And then we brought them back to our homes, and our wives helped
take wrap them and take care of
presents.
Yeah.
And
just
the kids felt good about themselves.
Yeah, they did. Because they were doing something on their own and doing it for their family. Not just the kids alone, we've done it for the whole family. I forgot that, but that was one of the nicest things I think we ever got involved in, was that. But today it isn't like that. I don't know why. People just don't get involved with things like that now.
I've told somebody that when you and I were kids, You used to go down to the Elks, and there'd be a
line,
a block long, and the Elks would give you an apple and an orange and a sack full of candy and some nuts. And now it's hard to get 25 kids at Christmas.
I couldn't hardly understand that when you mentioned that, but I realized that that's the way it was, you know. And it's but you know, at those days, it was, John, a sack of candy was worth a million to most kids. So even an orange was something, you know. But by gosh, I'll tell you, the kids aren't that way today, so.
When you were a kid, you used to like to go to the movies and things on Saturday. Did you get a chance to go and see Buck Jones,
Tracy?
Yep,
all those was number one. You know, at that time, John, when I was working for the farmers, I probably got paid $1 a day or something like that. And I got paid every Saturday. And I'd give the money to my mother, of course, but we'd go to the picture show for 10 cents. We'd buy a hamburger for 15. And, you know, it was really amazing. You know, Myrna and I have stopped and thought about this, you know, when we first started in the Fountain Cafe, we couldn't hardly believe it. Coffee was 10 cents a cup. And we looked up some of our menus, and our hamburgers was 15 cents, and then we finally went to 20. And but everything was so inexpensive at that time, you know. It just amazed me. And I picked up a menu from the old noodle parlor that used to be up there, and the prices that they charged was, you couldn't hardly believe it. I don't know whether you've seen that or not, but I have a copy of that. And Mrs. Vanderbilt gave it to me. And I ought to bring that down and let you take a look at it, because it's the old neuter parlor that was up. I think it was up above, what was it, Chris's Food?
And Johnson.
And that's right. That's where it was. And anyway, I had this menu of what they charged for their service up there. And it was, you know, it was just
bowl not, was a bowl of noodles
for a quarter. Yeah, it really was, for 25 cents. You could buy just about anything on that menu, and I think the highest price thing I looked at was 35 cents, you know, but I just couldn't hardly believe when she gave that to me. She sent it down there with Myrna, and to remember how inexpensive things were at that time, you know.
Everybody liked to go to China Mary's.
Yes, sir, always.
Everybody.
Yeah, they sure did.
You had to go up that steep stairway.
Stairway to get up there, yeah. Okay. But they done a fabulous business. I just, even as kids, you know, couldn't remember the amount of people that went up there, you know. But and then, of course, in that, getting into the music.